Welcome to Torah Yimecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Liat Meyerfeld, and I'm honored to be learning Sefer Shemot with you. Our Parsha this week is Parashat Terumah. One of the greatest gifts we can give to someone is to stop giving them gifts. Then they truly learn to grow wings of independence. The Jewish people had been on the receiving end of many godly gifts, receiving awe-inspiring miracles and an abundance of kindness. The splitting of the sea, the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. They not only don't thank God, but we hear a continuous series of grievances. They're thirsty, they're hungry, are they there yet? They want a new leader, they want to go back to Egypt. In our parsha this week, Hashem flips everything over. Not only is he not providing them with even more, he's requiring something of them. Tell the people of Israel to donate gifts to me. Daber el bnei Israel vayikru li truma. Donate. God requests give of your wealth. Start being active in this relationship. Build a tabernacle. Tabernacle, it's one of those words that even when it's translated, you still have no idea. It actually means a dwelling place, usually mobile. And it's a word really only used as a translation of Mishkan. I will use the Hebrew word Mishkan, the name Hashem himself gives to the traveling temple in the desert. A fabulous lift of precious metals, stones, fabrics, oils, and spices to be brought to the Mishkan. These can be collected only from those that want to give, and only the heartfelt amount that they genuinely want to donate. Asher nidveno libo. Participation in a relationship must be done from our own desire and not forced. Otherwise, it's not really a relationship. What happens next? We'd expect Hashem to wait and see what is brought. But no, Hashem immediately gives Moshe instructions on how to build the Mishkan. Hashem assumes that the people will give. God, the master educator, teaches us what happens when we have high expectations of people that we love. They rise to the challenge. We'll see in future that the people bring more than is needed. The Mishkan will be a means to an end, a tool where we can turn to Hashem and he responds that as wonderful as the Mishkan is, I will dwell within them. V'shachanti b'tocham. We will each become a vessel of godliness. The Torah gives instruction as to the outer building of the walls and roof and division of sections within the Mishkan. Then, descriptions of three items to be put into the Mishkan. Into the inner chamber, the Holy of Holies, behind a tapestry, were to put the wooden ark, coated both inside and out with gold and topped with a gold covering. On it, two kruvim. Kruvim are winged creatures, and there are long rabbinic discussions as to what creatures they were. Perhaps they were various types of kruvim. Traditionally, based on Rashi, we describe the kruvim on top of the ark as having young male and female faces. Second is the shulchan, a golden table, to display the lechem apanim, literally the face bread, but meaning that the bread that was on show. And third is the intricate, iconic, seven-branched menorah to be made from one block of gold. Writers in all types of media who produce series run the risk of losing people's interests, of ratings dropping. The Torah here seems to run the same risk. The beginning of Sefer Shemot was beyond exciting. Pharaoh, will he let them go? Waiting at midnight with bated breath. The Jews leave Egypt, the Egyptians are closing in. Plot twist, the sea has been split, but the Egyptians drowned at closing time. Are the Jewish people going to have what to eat and drink in the desert? The Torah has been given, everyone goes back to their tents, and the second half of Sefer Shemot is an immediate, stark contrast. We'll use all the elements of a good series. We're not told about any heroes, we don't have characters to relate to. We don't have a storyline, there's no real plot, there's no suspense. Instead, we now have a collection of incidents and a list of instructions. Lots of instructions. Isn't the Torah worried about ratings, about losing its readership? The answer is no, because from now on, we are the heroes. Newsflash, you've been chosen as the lead characters. The plot is the stories of our lives. The spotlight is on us. Before, it was turned towards our forefathers and mothers, and they are our guide. But now onto us. What's the suspense? The suspense is to see if we will choose good over bad. There is no story more interesting than us. Those years in the desert are gone, but we still have eternal instructions to build the temple. The list of instructions we're given are not a to-do list. They're a to-be list. These are all elements that we incorporate into our lives, each of us choosing how to do them in our own way. Each of our homes is described as a mini-temple, a mikdash me'at, and Hashem promises, and I will dwell within them. V'shachanti b'tocham. Come into our house on a Friday afternoon and you'll see three miracles. The cooking actually gets done, The house does get cleaned up, and no one gets majorly injured in the process. Actually, I rarely invite anyone into our house on a Friday afternoon. But come into ours and so many other homes on a Friday evening, and you'll see what the foundation of a Jewish home really is. We learn how to put the concepts of the Mishkan into practice when we look even further back in Jewish consciousness to the prototype of a Jewish home, Sarah's tent. The Midrash teaches that there were three miracles that existed when Sarah was alive. Her Shabbat candle stayed lit from Friday to Friday, her challah stayed fresh all week, and a spiritual cloud hovered over her tent. Forgive my initial cynicism if those seem less miraculous than the events in our home I first described. A lot of oil explains long-lit candles, a clever cellar would keep challah fresh, and condensation could explain the constant cloud. We have to look deeper at what the Midrash is really teaching us. Maybe it's just me, I don't think it is. I think we've all experienced the exhale feeling as we light Shabbat candles. Ah, we've done all we can. We didn't really need that extra kugel anyway, and all is good with our world. We feel a peacefulness and a calm, knowing that we will spend Shabbat appreciating the gifts Hashem has given us. We bless our children with the message that we love them completely, unconditionally, even if we had to ask for everything 10 times and they almost killed their sibling earlier. You get that Shabbat candle feeling? It's the feeling of a safe space, where we're all loved and cherished for who we are, where we have everything we need and have done exactly what we needed to do. Contrast that with the bombardment of negative messages we get outside our home. Use this makeup, you'll be pretty. Work harder, you'll be a success. Even if you try, you can never keep up with the constant pressure of the to-do list. At home, we should feel safe because all we have is the "It's great to be you" list. The concept of Sarah's Shabbat candles, lit all week, is to remind us to make sure that our homes are always a place where everyone is loved unconditionally and a safe space for them to be exactly themselves. The menorah in the Mishkan was constantly lit and symbolizes the light each life brings to the world. King Solomon in Mishlei teaches, the soul of man is God's candle. Ner Elokim, Nishmat Adam. The lights reflect our intrinsic value and represent each of our capacity to always shine bright. You are seen and you are loved. Challah. Everyone loves fresh challah. But what does it symbolize? Why is it so intrinsic to our homes? Studies that show what we eat and how we eat affects us physically and in a deep emotional way. And one of the meanings behind kashrut is that eating affects our spiritual reality too. Judaism says even more. We're not just what we eat, but we are the sum of all of our experiences. We're supposed to pay attention to everything that happens around us and to how we respond. We experience things for a reason, and each of those experiences and our actions shapes who we are tomorrow. For example, a woman walking down the street in front of you juggling bags and drops them, apples go rolling, toothpaste in a puddle. You can stop and help pick things up, or we walk past lifting an eyebrow judging that she put too many apples in that bag. Hello, I then tell myself, you do that too. Or we run to work, and that will affect us. Or if I know my friend is having a hard day, I can go about my business, or I can drop off sushi or a latte on my way home, or I can call or send a message. The experience we engage or don't engage with, either way, we're different people than we were before. And so day after day. We can't control what's outside, but we can control what's inside our homes. The books we read and videos we watch, for example, we should pay attention. You can't erase those things from your mind. The conversations we have and the activities we engage with, pay attention and make sure they're spiritually healthy. Be purposeful and mindful of what we bring in. That's the Jewish way to build a home. Challah is the expression of humankind's interaction with the physical world. I've never baked challah. Please don't judge. But I know that to bake challah, you needed to plant seeds and harvest wheat, grind flour and get yeast or a sourdough starter. We need water and fire. One cannot bake bread without engaging with the world around us. The challenge is to pay attention to how we do it. Beautifully, we used braided challah to show the intricacy of our lives, passions, and priorities that we weave together. We make decisions as to what we braid in. We can't have an infinite number of strands, and some things we have to take out and say, I don't have room in my life for this anymore. I'm definitely not signing up to that kickboxing class. And some things we prioritize and make sure that they are embedded in our lives, like, I must always remember to call my mother and my mother-in-law. Haima! Haima! We serve challah and eat kosher all week long to inculcate this idea of purposefulness. Sarah's challah staying fresh reminds us that our choices of how we engage with this world should always be woven together purposefully. The shulchan in the Mishkan, the table, displayed bread and spices. Loaves for each tribe and spices whose smell affects everything nearby was placed in our field of vision on an ornate table. These represent the abundant gifts we receive and the need to use all our opportunities in a way that leaves a pleasing, sweet smell. Your actions matter. Sarah's cloud is symbolic of the synthesis of our physical and spiritual realities. A cloud is actually a combination of solids, liquids, and gases, so it's tangible, but it's not. Physical and spiritual, body and soul. Neither asceticism nor hedonism is viable. With asceticism, you deny you have a body. And with hedonism, you deny you have a soul. We need both of them. When God created humankind, he forms our bodies from the physical and breathes godliness, the spiritual soul, into us. Here is the world, he says. I've put everything in place for you to build, to grow. Use it wisely. All the physical gifts God has given us, they're intrinsically neutral, neither good nor bad. Our choices will be the defining factor. Speech, for example, neither good nor bad in essence. We can use our words to share ideas and connect people, but we can destroy a person's life with just a few misplaced words too. Is money good or bad? Depends how we use it. One can be ostentatious and become elitist and arrogant, but we can enjoy sometimes spending a bit too much money on an amazing pair of shoes. And giving charity, we share love and bring comfort to those around us. The challenge is to live life using all our physical gifts for their best spiritual purposes. A constant spiritual cloud over Sarah's tent reminds us that in our homes we're always making decisions that balance our physical and spiritual selves. You are a beautiful collaboration of a body and a soul. In the Holies of Holies, in the Mishkan, the Torah tells us to place the Holy Ark with Kruvim, a male and female facing each other. One might think this is so inappropriate. You'd argue that when dealing with the Mishkan and the Holy of Holies at that, now is not a time for frivolous romance. You'd be right. It's not a time for frivolous anything. Relationships are a serious thing, requiring time and effort. Requiring constant thought and investment. The husband-wife relationship is made up of all the elements of human interaction. The Kruvim facing each other symbolize the relationship of a husband and wife needing to be a synthesis of all the elements based on holiness and purity. Our homes depend on it. These first three items described for the Mishkan teach us what the primary foundations of a mini Mikdash, Mikdash Me'at, a Jewish home, should be. Shabbat and its candles to replicate the peaceful light of the menorah. Challah and kashrut in general to remind us to be careful that the experience we internalize are always fresh and sweet, like the bread and spices on the shulchan. Family purity represented by the spiritual cloud and the kruvim, beautifully expressing that we must infuse our physical world with spirituality. As in the redemption from Egypt, so too in all redemptions, we are inspired by the home of Sarah. To actualize those concepts, creating a safe space and building an environment of unconditional love, to carefully choose what we bring into our homes and take ownership of our experiences, and to invest spirituality in the physical, infusing our lives with holiness and purity. That's how Jewish homes are built. Thank you for learning together.